Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast has been teaching the art of screaming since 1979 and has been the go-to for the talent of many agents and record labels alike. Thanks to her technical prowess as a vocal coach, she holds multiple collegiate degrees from Fort Wright College and Cornish College of the Arts, with advanced studies at the University of Washington and understudy with Timothy Leon out of Los Angeles. Her impressive clientele includes Alice in Chains, The Head and the Heart, Macklemore, Drowning Pool, and that is just scratching the surface. Successful artist of her own, a published author, an accredited actress, and has appeared in a number of shorts and nationally syndicated TV series, including an episode of Gilmore Girls. So please welcome the woman who can sing in six different languages and has honed some of the greatest vocalists to come out of LA, New York, and Seattle, Susan Carr.
Wow. Thank you very much for that introduction.
My pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
So do you want me to tell you a little bit about how it all began?
Yes, that would be absolutely wonderful. When did you first discover your passion for music and what led you to pursue it?
So I was really actually at the very beginning of my life a pianist. I started about when I was 6 years old and continued on until I got into high school. But the first year that I had in high school, of course, I went to a Catholic high school, is the teacher would take a ruler and hit my hand every time I made a mistake.
Oh, no.
So I thought to myself, I don't want to continue this. So the next time I had a lesson, I said to her, listen, I've decided I'm going to become a vocalist. And so that's why I switched to voice. And there was a really great voice teacher at St. Mary's Academy in Portland. Her name was Sister Beverly Miles. And I studied with her. And I always, when I was really young, had heard sometimes opera on the radio. And I thought, oh my God, that is so amazing what these people can do with their voice. So I decided that I was going to maybe pursue opera, classical. And I asked Sister Beverly Miles who to study with. And she says, you have to study with my teacher, which is Dr. Marietta Coyle. So I went to Spokane because that's where Marietta was. She was at the Fort Wright College of the Holy Names. And she was an amazing teacher. She taught also Thomas Hampson, who was New York Metropolitan Opera singer and an amazing person, who he and I were in the same class. There were only four of us, right, that studied with her. And we learned so much from her. But she also noticed that I had this really interesting knack for teaching people. Like, I knew how to break things down and figure things out like a little detective. And so she noticed that and decided that she wanted to give me a teaching assistantship where I would teach all the incoming students. So that was a pretty tall order
right.
to do that, you know, because it was like, oh my gosh. And so I started developing these skills, but I also was kind of in that time period of the 70s, kind of a little rebel girl. And I decided that I started doing other music besides just classical music. And I started to do country music and rock music. And I was in a little country rock band in Spokane. And then people started coming to me and like going, hey, how do you sing the way you do? Well, I took the bel canto opera style of exercises and I flipped them and changed them so they would be more exercises towards contemporary music like rock and pop and blues and jazz and country and whatever. And so when I started to do that, people really like noticed like, wow, my voice is really getting better. But they also realized I was young and I wasn't like some old teacher with gray hair going, you can't sing that music. That's the devil's music. That you will hurt your voice forever.
Right.
And I was developing exercises to do that and to help them. And so when I came to Seattle, I started right in on kind of the pre-grunge music scene. And I started developing these exercises and people started coming to me. And, you know, some of my, I'll give you Lane Staley and Jerry Cantrell, Jeremy Enick, Sunny Day Real Estate, Adam Seitzler and Dudley Taff from Sweetwater, Robert Roth from Truly, Chad Price from All, Ben McMillan from Grunt Truck, which turned into Skin Yard,
wow.
Abe Ben Brennan, which was My Name, Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter, Chris Ballew, the Presidents of the United States, Guy Davis of Sage. So I was like working and developing these concepts that made them like realize that they could do so much more with their voices, mm-hmm. and they weren't hurting their voices.
Yeah.
And I started developing this concept of how to scream without hurting your voice. And people were really excited about that because it was like, you know, they weren't feeling any more pain.
As a singer in a rock band, you think that it's right here, right? And for those listening, it's right in the throat is where a lot of people think that comes from. So how did you end up working with some of these folks? You were classically trained and it's a very different scene than that of like the grunge scene.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like getting involved in? And how did you like approach these groups and get to know them?
I approached these groups by did a lot of my own PR. I contacted managers, I contacted our A&R reps, I contacted, anybody that was, you know, of a label, letting them know who I was, who I was working with. And then also it just got around that, you know, word of mouth, and then pretty much, people started sending and coming. But also I do this one thing and have still to this day, I go see my bands play and then I give them feedback and then we work on the song material so that they can get better. And I work on presentation as well. And then, you know, they learn a lot that way, how to emote and all that emotionally.
Yeah, that's incredible. And when you're starting to work with these folks, were you able to deduce right off the bat if they had some sort of issue? Were
yes.
you coming in just kind of breaking it down?
Yes. So Dr. Marietta Coyle, in my working with her, had me, and I did understand that there was a sound that had to be developed in the person's voice. And my ears are really clued to that sound. And when that sound is done, it's like the sweet spot of a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. When you hit the sweet spot, that's what it feels like in your body. And so it's very hard for people because a piano or bass or guitar, you know, you pick them up, you have to tune them. But when you are a singer, it's all inside.
Right.
You're dealing with muscles, you're dealing with bone amplification of vibrations. And that's really, really hard for people to get inside and make that thing line up.
And so what was the most common mistake you were seeing folks make then and even now
hurting
their voice?
Yeah, they were singing from their throat. They were learning, they were using their larynx to make the scream, and the scream is not made there. It's made up actually where the soft palate is. So if you opened your mouth at night and looked in the back of your throat where your arches are, if you have tonsils, and then there's your uvula or your velum, and then the area above that is called the soft palate, that's where the growl scream is made. And that doesn't matter if you were doing screams from the pre-grunge scene to the grunge scene to the metal scene and all the sounds they're making down now, it's all made in the same place.
I had heard soft palate, but never had it explained in how to actually trigger it, if you will.
It's like gargling. If you took a sip of water and you went...
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's made because it's like a fluttering or flapping of those membranes.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get it ignited with a consonant.
Interesting. Okay. That's fascinating. I was watching some of the videos that you have up on your YouTube channel. What they were also talking about was how important it was to take care of the rest of the body too, and some of the feedback of especially musicians that are going on tour.
Yes.
And whatnot, how important that is. I guess when you meet with someone, say, for the first time, and they're like, okay, I want to go on tour, and this is how I sing, like, what it, as far as preparation, just physically outside of getting obviously proper technique down, what do you recommend to folks when they're like getting ready to go out for the first time?
Well, this is a really interesting thing about people, is that I teach them breathing exercises and then I teach them vocal exercises, right? And sometimes I ask them like, okay, how were your exercises? And they go, oh, I did all the breathing exercises. But they don't understand that the vocal exercises, if they spent 25 to 30 minutes, five times a day on that, that would give them the support, the strength they need. That would give them the placement that they need and have it established so it's there for them. And then they could apply it to their songs. But a lot of people think like, oh, I just sing my songs. If you just sing your songs, you'll never get better. You have to learn the technique. And my technique is pretty foolproof because I'm 65 years old and I've been doing this since I was 16 and I've never lost my voice. Mm-hmm. And my students all are pretty amazing singers with what they've done with their careers.
I was going to say, I just saw Allison Chains a year and a half ago and Jerry Cantrell is still going strong. Sounds exactly like he did. Actually, probably better than he did in the 90s.
Oh, cool.
A lot healthier in many ways, but yeah, it was incredible to see. I was with my girlfriend, they were opening for Guns N' Roses, and I was like, oh my goodness, he sounds like the record. You know, he's coming through. And fanboy moments aside,
yes, exactly.
So you had gone to school and then did you move back to Seattle then, and this is where most of your clientele was? Or
yes, I came here in Seattle and then I established my studio here. And then when my son graduated from high school, I left. That was in 1997. I left and I went to New York. And then I established my studio in New York. And I worked with, just to give you an idea of some people in New York, I worked with Betty Callis of Hansel and Gretel, Liza Marcus from the Liza Marcus Band, Rosie O'Shea from Miss Crabtree, who's also was featured on Hal Hartley's film, The Book of Life. I worked with the Sons of Bitches, Craigera, I think that's how you. So I worked with a lot of people in New York, and I was only there, though, for a short period of time, because then I was there really mainly to go back into establishing myself as an actress, because my son was graduated from high school, so I wanted to pursue a little more of my time and my talent. Mm-hmm. So then my husband and I decided that if we were going to choose between New York or LA, we would go to LA. So then I went to LA and I started working with, in my studio, I don't know if you know Phil Taylor from Machina, Future Leaders of the World. I worked with Dave Williams, the late Dave Williams of Drowning Pool,
yeah.
Dryden Mitchell from Alien Ant Farm. I worked with James Easton of Droit, Craig Rondell of Boy Hits Car, and, you know, just many, many other people in Los Angeles. And so that I was there for about 7 years and then came back to Seattle in 2004. And then I've been working here, and then I would go back and forth to LA. And
to be able to even have so much success in multiple cities as like a businesswoman.
Yes.
How did you approach that move going to these new cities? Did you already have relationships there because of the prior work you'd been doing?
Yes. I set up again my PR work. In those days, of course, it was a typewriter and an envelope with a stamp on it. And I wrote every A&R rep, every label. I told them who I was and I was coming to to New York. And I did the same thing for Los Angeles as well. And I made my connections, you know, there because I would, you know, work with certain people and or be in the engineer, you know, studio, you know, working on albums and things like that. So, yeah, I did a lot of PR, probably more so than most people would have done, and I continue to do it, but it's hard.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work, and yeah. I'm not as good anymore. I'm not as good as the social media as I could be because I didn't grow up understanding that world, you know, and I still work really hard, but it's like, you guys,
it changes so much.
Yeah. You guys run circles around me. And I'm calling up my son. Hey, can you help me figure this out? It won't work. You know?
Yeah. You mentioned kind of having different mediums through which you worked with artists. You were attending their shows and giving them feedback, going into the studio, and then of course like one-on-one sessions. Did you have a favorite medium in which you got to interact with these artists? Were you like, oh, I love being in the studio while they're getting ready to record? Or,
oh yeah, I think studio work is really, really nice because I get there and I get there early and I warm everybody up, and then, you know, who might be in the band singing. And then I liked being in the studio with the engineer and the producer and them saying, oh, you know, this isn't working. And then I go, just a second. And I go back into the room with the vocalists and like, go, try this and try that. And then, you know, come back and we listen to it and they're going, oh my God, that was so much better. You know,
right.
You know, so it is, I really have done a lot of it and I do like it.
Do you still like to go into the studio here? Do you have
I don't so much here anymore. I really prepare all the songs on the albums with my students. Like, you know, I've been really happy this year because that's one thing I missed. I feel like that was a negative, is that there's very few women singers, women vocalists in bands. And they never have gotten their notoriety. My one student, Jessie Sykes in Sweet Hereafter, did. But, you know, I have these wonderful women I'm working with now, which are Kathy Moore, Sarah Rutenoff, who just sang at the Women in Rock concert at the Benaroya Hall, and Jen Ayers, Jane Mabry Smith, Greta Hartley, and Faith Stanovic. I think that's how you say her last name. So I like the fact that there's just these strong groups of women that are coming up, and, you know, I don't know what the future brings to them, but they certainly, it's a coalition,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty neat.
Yeah. And there's definitely a shift. I feel like even until about 10 years ago, and I think this is kind of what you're alluding to, is a lot of groups, especially like in rock, have been predominantly male. And we're starting to see a shift, like Lacuna Coils and Hailstorms come through. And
yeah.
With Seattle, you've got like Heart who came out of here.
Yeah, it's
like,
exactly.
It's like very cool. But and thank you for shouting those out. One thing that I actually do is I put together a Spotify playlist for each episode.
Oh, nice.
So can be sure to feature them on there and showcase their music and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, is there a difference in approach? I think I saw when I was going through some of the videos online, there was a video that was like the screaming for men and screaming for women. Is there?
Yeah. No, it's all the same. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just teaching them how to, you know, work from their core muscles, you know. And I think men are more kind of used to working from the core muscles, and women, you know, have to really give them all these props and ideas of like, oh, you know, squeeze on the yoga block and, you know, ride this like you're riding a bareback horse, you know. It's like, you know, I have to, you know, do a lot to get the women to feel that and such. But I've got some great singers, great belters, you know, great screamers that are women. So it's really neat. But I think the hardest thing is to understand where the placement is when they do the scream, so it doesn't fall down and then go into their larynx. You know, you have to keep it up, and that has a lot to do with just being in tune with your soft palate.
Some folks will watch a couple of videos or do a couple of warm-ups and like, oh, okay, I've got it down. Like, as far as some of your students, how long is that process of training your vocals and then, of course, maintaining them?
So you have to train, you know, if I ask people to stay committed for at least a year, because at least a year I can get some sort of stability with their voice. And then the second year I can start to work on, like, I call it the frosting on the cake. And then, you know, by the third year, you know, they really are doing what they're doing and feeling like they're just coming in here to work on, you know, recording material and, you know, getting ready for the show or the tour. Yeah. So it takes, you know, you can't learn this in six easy lessons. You have to really commit to the time, and you have to really commit to the fact that, you know, in my studio, I don't take people that are just trying to sing better in the shower. I want people that come in with music career goals and that together we are achieving those goals. Like I had a student who was in a band in Los Angeles called the Hepcats. And he called me one night and he from New York because he was on the David Letterman show. And that was one of our goals.
Very cool.
And so he was on David Letterman and he was like going, Sue, I finally got that goal. And I said, that's so cool. And he goes, but I don't know now what other goals I need to take. I gave him a few. But, you know, I like to be part of someone. I think it's someone's dream. You know, I like being part of someone's dream because I know how hard it is. You know, I've worked for my dreams really, really hard. And I know that we all have this sense of fame and fortune, but you know, sometimes it doesn't come that way, but you have to do it because you just really love it. You have a passion for it.
Absolutely. And one of the things, I guess, as a sidebar here is you've found success in multiple mediums.
Yes.
You've published a book and then you've been featured in TV shows and movies. What was it about your approach that enabled you to do that? You already kind of mentioned you were hitting the pavement and you were getting your name out there. For folks that are just trying to make it, or I should take a step back, for those interested in maybe doing TV and music, what is your advice? And
yeah, I think, you know, if you look at a lot of TV actors, like I worked with Brian Greenberg and John Cho, you know, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. I think that's the film. Yeah. Anyway, and so if you look at a lot of famous celebrities, they're also in bands, right? Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Bacon is in a band with maybe his brother. So it's important to do both, definitely. And if you're, you know, if you like to paint. If you like to write stories, I mean, that seems kind of logical if you're an actor or if you write lyrics, right? So if you like to write. Do all of it because it's important to be just showing that you're very versatile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Perfect segue is, did you find that there was crossover between the businesses when you really got into it and were getting to know these people?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And so one thing we've talked a little bit about is that you had a lot of like rock and heavy metal clients. What was it that drew you to that? Because you mentioned you were in the classical training and you had kind of this rebellious spirit.
Yes.
What was it that, because you've published materials on a bunch of different mediums on the art of screaming. Mm-hmm. What was it that drew you to that?
It's because when people scream, they're most primal. And I love primal things. You know, I love that concept. There's this cool guy. I can't remember. He was in this band called Medicine Hat. And I went to the OK Hotel. I think that's where he was performing. And he came out when he was going to perform and he was like all like feathers and bones and his hair is sticking out. And he looked like this amazing primal person, you know, on stage when he was performing. And it was like, that's why I like it. It's just so deep inside of you. And people need to be able to be primal and scream.
Mm-hmm. But you know? In a healthy manner.
In a healthy manner, but just, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gets, oh, it hurts my voice, or I need to be so prim and proper. No. Let yourself go.
You mentioned kind of engaging that core and
yes.
whatnot. How important is cardio or ab work or anything like that?
No. It's incredibly important. Like, you know, you have to be physically like a marathon runner when you're doing this kind of work. And I work out 5 times a week. So I expect my students to be doing that too. And I have to do, you know, everything to build my, you know, abdominals, my back muscles, my diaphragm, my upper part of my sternum. All these muscles are part of it. And if you're like flabby, you're going to sing flabby.
Yeah. Does diet play into it?
In screaming, it's really important to have something to coat the throat when you're learning how to scream. Mm. So I do suggest chocolate milk or chocolate alternatives like hemp or rice or soy. Yeah, you do need something to coat your throat. So I don't believe that thing about chocolate milk or milk, hurts your singing. No, it's very good for screaming. And also, but you do have to be careful about reflux. Acid reflux, you know, so you have to be careful. Like sometimes there might be certain foods that you eat that are burning your vocal cords as you sleep at night.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So you have to be careful because you could hurt your vocal cords, not because you sang, but because of what you eat.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about or the inactivity or hurting yourself during inactivity.
Yeah.
I talk a lot. I have a podcast. I'm never shutting up. But how important is it to take into, I guess, your vocal output when preparing for any sort of tour or anything like that?
Exactly. And when I went to Cornish, I went through the professional actors training program there. I studied a tremendous amount of classes in speech work. And then when I went to New York, I did the same, and also in Los Angeles. And I utilized those speech techniques for my singers. But you do need to marry your speaking voice and your singing voice.
Oh, fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I had seen, this was a long time ago, it was an interview with the singer of 3 Days Grace, and he has just a super gravelly voice. And I remember he's in an interview and he's like, oh yeah, I'm not supposed to talk much today.
Right.
And so I don't know if it was because he was sick or something, but the way it came off, and when he went on to describe it, he was basically like, I need to give you kind of short answers because I'm trying to rest my vocal cords, and not sure what that was all about, but that's why I was curious.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes there's a suggestion to go to somebody who's a speech therapist to learn how to correctly speak. You can hear with my voice, I'm always speaking in the mask of my face. Mm-hmm. So that's where I sing from.
Oh, interesting. I'd never heard it like put that way. And so that's really avoiding.
So I'm not right just here. Dumping it in my throat.
Yeah.
Right. That would tear up my throat. And I have to, you know, I teach five hours a day. So, you know, I'm doing a lot of talking, a lot of singing. And I have a band. I have a Latin jazz band. And I perform. And sometimes I'm performing 2 hours, you know, two sets a night or more. And so I can't lose my voice, right? And I'm an actress. And so I have to have my voice always flexible.
Definitely. And I would actually love to talk about that as well. Would you mind, do you want to highlight kind of your band as well and how people can kind of see y'all perform and where they can find your music and such?
Oh, yeah. If people want to go to www.susanmcarr.com, that's where you can kind of find my information about when my band's playing next and such.
Very cool. And I thought it was fascinating, too, that you can sing in English and then five additional languages as well. Was that part of your classical upbringing?
Yes.
Do you have a favorite?
Yes, I like that. I like French and I like Portuguese. It's because I love the language of French. It's just a beautiful sounding language. And then I like the Portuguese because it's French and Spanish together.
Did learning all those, or how to sing in all those different languages, impact the way you sing? Or was it vice versa? You learned how to sing properly so that you were able to be so versatile.
Yeah, I think it's more that way. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Very cool. And so you mentioned singing for, you know, multiple sets in a night or up to 2 hours. What is your personal routine look like? Are you getting to the venue early and warming up there? Or what's your process to get ready?
Usually you want to warm up 2 to 3 hours before your show. You can do that and still be warmed up. And so I do that. And my day is spent usually focusing on my material, like how I want to portray the song emotionally, you know, how I want the set to run, how I hear it. And, you know, a lot of prep is just me putting myself in that situation, doing a good job.
Awesome. And so as far as, you know, kind of what's next, are you currently taking new clients, or if you're looking in for folks, how should they reach out? If not, I can cut that part.
people can certainly reach out to me. And usually a good way to reach out to me is text me at 310-753-8195 or my email, which is carnival, CARNIVAL, carnival 102 at msn.com. And yes, my studio is pretty full right now, but I do take new people on when there's cancellation spots, you know, I can put them in. Also my son, Wolf Carr, who's in I don't know if you know about my app, but I do have an app that's only through the Apple Store.
Oh, very cool.
And it's like that woman screaming right there called The Art of Screaming, Create Your Own Vocal Warm-Up. And in this app, which you have to buy, of course, because it has close to 30 individual exercises, and it has categories like warming up your head voice, your chest voice, your head belt, your falsetto, blending your registers. It has a lot of different exercises, but they're built into being a beginner, intermediate, and advanced exercise. So it's a lot of video, a lot of piano accompaniment to the exercises, but it's great. And my son Wolf Carr studied with me and then went to the Berklee School of Music in Boston. He came up here in Seattle and has been working with some prominent names, but he's now moving back to to Portland, Oregon. And he's worked with Modest Mouse and the Fleet Foxes and, you know, pretty major people, Grizzly Bear and lots of people.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's become
the baton has been passed.
Yeah. Very cool. So Wolf Carr, and how for those listening, how is that spelled to find his?
Oh, Wolf is W-O-L-F, Carr, C-A-R-R. Vocal Studio is what he does. www.wolfcarvocalstudio.com.
Well, I'll have to check out that app as well. I wasn't aware of that. That's very cool. And So on the Apple Store, and it's The Art of Screaming.
Create your own vocal warm-up.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh,
we'll be sure to post links to all to your app, to your website, all that good stuff. And really, truly do appreciate you taking the time to do this. It was great sitting down and having a chat with you.
Great. Thank you so much, Duncan.
Yeah, my pleasure. For those of you who don't know, that was Rooster by Seattle's own Alice in Chains, one of Susan's early clients and one of the most prominent players in the Seattle scene in the 90s and in the grunge era as a whole. Be sure to check out The Art of Screaming. Her app is available on the Apple Store, which you can get on your iPhone, iPad, all that good stuff. As well, there's a DVD and she's got a YouTube series up, so be sure to check all those out. And visit her website, SusanMcarr.com. And if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. And I will see you next time.